You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are joining us for the very first time. Welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. Hope you make a habit out of it. It's a good habit to get into. Very quickly, a couple of things that I need to bring you up to date on. For those of you who have been saying, I don't know, you know, maybe I might register for that seminar. Better hurry. Seminar registration closes on Friday at noon. Now, that's not arbitrary. We're not doing that to make life difficult for anybody. But you see, right after that, I have to send out the passwords to everyone. And so we have to close it down at noon so that by 1 or 2 o'clock, I can get those passwords out to everyone who's registered. So if you're thinking about registering for the Gods in the Garden seminar, then you need to go ahead and get it done, because Friday at noon, we have to close it down. K-Files e-zine. Now look, I say this night after, I'm not scolding, I'm just announcing. I say this night after night after night, that a lot of the issues and a lot of the things that you would like for me to respond to, if I get like, you know, 30, 40 emails with similar information, similar request, it doesn't, there's no way that I can sit down and write the same reply 30 times. Okay? I could, but I mean, there's no time. And so I answer most of the big things that people are asking about in the K-Files e-zine, and it's free. So there's really no reason for you not to be getting it, except you just haven't done it. So go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says K-Files e-zine, and then you'll start receiving. Well, you click that, and you give us your first name and your email address. And we don't share those with anybody. We don't sell them or rent them or let anybody else use them. So you're not going to get spammed as a result of having subscribed. And it's free. It's free. F-R-E-E. Free. There's no reason for you to be in the dark. So go over and click that and subscribe, okay? I got some emails again today with folks expressing their concern for my granddaughter. Thank you so much for that. She is recovered. She had open heart surgery, as you know. She's recovering. She is now out of intensive care. And my son called and left a message. I was not in the office. He left a message for me telling me that they've removed all the tubes and the wires and the IVs and everything, and she's just in a regular room and recovering nicely. So thank you so much for your expressions of concern for her. She is doing very well, and I do appreciate it very much. Now, I wasn't going to say anything about it, but we have a lot of dust in the air here in my area of the country, and I am having problems with my voice. don't normally say anything about that, but I may from time to time have to cut this mic off and clear my throat or cough. Just bear with me. We'll get through it. My guest this evening is Aurora Light. She'll join us right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said, my guest this evening is Aurora Light, a name that many of you are already familiar with. You are familiar with her, I'm sure, because she has appeared on over 2,000 radio and television shows. She is the founder of HealthGalleria.com, has her own radio show, and she is the co-author of a book called Prepare for the Landings, co-author with Michael Elagion, that was my guest, not last night, but night before, on Monday night. And she is known, well known, for over two decades of work as a psychic and a healer and a writer and speaker. Aurora, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been looking forward to it.
You know, I ran into you out in Hollywood. You were out there for the Moon Rising premiere.
That's right.
And that's the first time I had actually met you. I have seen you on the internet. I've seen you where you're appearing on someone's show and they have an ad on the internet. So I was familiar with you. But that was the first time I had met you. And you and Michael have written this book called Prepare for the Landings. Now, I got to ask you a question, Aurora. With more than two decades as a psychic and a healer, how did you arrive at co-authoring a book about coming landings of extraterrestrial craft?
Well, that's an interesting question, Kevin, because when I was a little girl, I always wanted to know what was the answer to everything. You know, why were we here? Who put us here? Where were we going? Did extraterrestrials exist? So on and so forth. So I was a very inquisitive child, and when I had my first experience at 8 years old, when I was living in Royal Oak, Michigan, a suburb of Detroit, I knew then afterwards, after my first experience with a human appearing ET, that they did exist for sure, and that they were a reality that few people knew about. I found out afterwards when I went to tell people about my experience.
How, now, you're 8 years old, and this ET appears to you, and this ET is human appearing, looks human. How did you know it was an ET?
Well, I didn't at first, and I was wondering, you know, why this gentleman was walking through my house, looking through things. Well, he acted like he was curious about what was around me, and he came into my bedroom, stood over my bed for a few moments, and went out the window. And he looked very much like Robert Young in Father Knows Best, which just happened to be my favorite prototype at the time of a man, you know. I always thought he was so cool and really nifty guy. So that was the 50s, you know, and mm-hmm. that was the archetype at the time. And when I went to the window to see, after he went out my bedroom window after a few moments of standing over my bed, and I went to the bedroom window to see if he was still there on our property, and that's when I saw the two UFOs, the two spaceships, I should say, that were hovering above the trees in the park across the street from my home. And one was like a powder blue light, and the other was kind of a pinky reddish color, kind of a rose color. And first one went up and made this kind of high-pitched whine when it went up, and the other one followed it. And they one was like a ball, and the other was like a disc, and they appeared to be quite large, I'd say 40, 50, 60 feet in diameter. And when they disappeared instantly, I could not hear or see them. And, of course, back then at 8 years old, I thought, wow, these guys can really travel fast. And then when I got older, I found out about interdimensional travel, and I realized they had just slipped into another dimension.
All right. Now, this guy is wandering around in your house, and he goes out a window. Did the thought ever occur to you that, hey, this is a burglar?
Yes. At first, I did. When he first walked in and I heard his footsteps, it was about 9:15 in the evening. Now, that would be an odd time, if you think about it, to pull a burglary.
Oh, yeah. They happen in the daytime, mostly.
In the bathroom with his electric shaver going, the bathroom door closed. My mother was out for the evening. My infant sister was asleep in the room next to mine. And I had, like, this bionic hearing, and I could hear him when he walked in, and I could... And I thought, well, he must be a burglar. That was my first thought, because he didn't announce himself and seemed like he was trying to be secretive.
Were you frightened?
Yes, mm-hmm. I was. And as he started walking down the hallway to my room, I thought, I wondered if I was dreaming at first. And so I decided I needed scientific proof so I would know whether or not I had been dreaming. Just been dreaming, so I bit off all my fingernail tips on my left hand, and I crunched them all off really fast with my teeth, and I had them in the tips of my mouth, all the tips in my mouth, and I was pretending to be asleep when he was standing there in my bedroom door. And I thought, I'm going to pretend like I'm asleep, because I had watched all these Perry Mason TV shows as a kid. And I knew that if you could identify the criminal, they had to kill you. So I thought, okay, I'll pretend like I'm a slave. Then he won't have to kill me.
So he goes out of the window, and then you went to the window and looked out, and you saw these craft. How far away from the craft, or how far away from you, were the craft?
Well, it was just a short block away,
mm-hmm.
a very short block away. My backyard, then the people's behind me backyard, a small backyard, and their home, and then the park. So it wasn't really that far at all. And I was wondering why no one else was looking at these spaceships. I could see busy Woodward Avenue. And this was, by the way, the park that this took place in, where the ships were over, is called Star Park.
Well, that's interesting.
And years later, it's on Star Road. And years later, when I went back to show somebody where the incident had taken place, there was a drive-in restaurant there with a UFO circling around the top of it called the Orbit.
Wow.
The Orbit restaurant.
Well, now I'm just curious about this. Did you happen to go into this restaurant and ask them why they named it that? Maybe they saw it too.
You know, I didn't, because at the time it was just so hilarious that I was just laughing about it. I couldn't even believe that somebody named their restaurant the Orbit. But you're right. I should have went in there and checked it out, but I hadn't. I was so intent on seeing if I was picking up any energies over there at the park.
Mm-hmm. Did you?
And, having the recall about the whole experience, knowing then in 1956 that for sure they did exist.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of set the course for me. Then when I was 16 years old, I had my second experience, major experience, I should say, when I was teleported. My life was saved when I was driving my boyfriend's convertible. I was about to crash into five lanes of traffic and I was going 50 miles an hour, approaching a light that had prematurely turned red. I found out years later it was a source of many car accidents, this ill-timed light. It was the second busiest death corner in Michigan. And so there I was, faced with this red light that I hadn't expected. And all the cars were zipping across, and I couldn't stop in time, and I prayed. I said, "Dear God, please don't let me hurt or kill anyone." And I threw myself down on the floor of the car to wait for the crashing to begin, because I knew I couldn't stop in time at all. I put my left foot on the brake, tried to slow it down, and expected full well to go into a spin or something. Well, all of a sudden, there was no noise or movement at all, and I realized I'd probably died because I didn't hear anything. Nothing was happening. I thought, okay, I must be dead. So I put my arm down for my left arm down from the steering wheel I'd been holding while my head was on the floor and the passenger side with my right arm over my head, and I pinched my arm just to see if I could feel it. And I could feel it, and I thought, okay, I'm dead, and I can still feel things. Oh, this won't be so bad. You'll get used to it, you know. But now you have to sit up and see where I wound up. And I was kind of afraid of that because I figured in my family, the only one who was making it to heaven was my grandmother.
So you figured you had wound up in the other place.
Okay, God, please, just purgatory. That would be good enough. I would pray. If I can't get to heaven, I'll take purgatory. So I was negotiating at this point. And I sat up to see where I was, kind of frightened, and I found myself parked lanes over all the traffic, parked perfectly next to a gas station pump. And then what was so interesting was, not only that, but none of the cars were moving. Nobody was moving. They were batting an eye. I was in what is called a time-space warp, and I was just totally amazed.
So the traffic that you
was moving.
The traffic that you were about to run into was not moving. It was just still out on the street.
Every single person and thing was stopped. There was not a twitter of a bird.
How long did that seem to take?
You know, I sat there for a while looking around at everybody, and then I felt like I had to do something to make it all go back to normal, like it was up to me somehow. And first of all, I said a prayer, and I said a telepathic communication, and I said, "Who did this?" And, you know, I was, and a voice came back to me very clearly in my head and said, "Chalk it up to divine intervention." And a female's voice. And I said, "Really?" And I said, "Why did you save my miserable life when so many other people die every day?" And I was kind of like, it was bitter, you know, complaining to him about my life circumstances at the time, because I was going through a rough period. And they said, "You have much work to do here on this planet. And you have much work to do here in the future." And I thought, and they said, "You were going to bring a lot of new information to the planet." And I thought, what in the world could I bring that's new? You know, and it wasn't until really years later that I got the answer to that information when I met Michael in Phoenix, Arizona. And he was kind of like the missing piece to so many things that I had wanted to know about.
Now, at that time, you're 16 years old, mm-hmm. and you just had this really weird experience happen.
Mm-hmm.
Were you a psychic at that time, or were you aware that you're psychic at that time?
Well, you know, I did think I was psychic, yes. And I told my grandmother when I was about 10, 11 years old about my mother and my father's relationship and their past life together.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "Do you know why Mom says this and Dad says that?" "Well, that's because of this and that and that and this," I was telling my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
that they had this former lifetime together, and she did this, and he did that. And I was explaining it all to her. And my grandmother seemed to accept it very, very well. She didn't say, oh, my God, you're crazy, you're just making it up or something. She said, that's interesting. She mm-hmm. didn't validate me, but she didn't destroy me either. Mm-hmm. She kind of, like, listened to me and thought, well, that was a very interesting insight and into their relationship. And then I started looking around at other people's relationships and tried to visualize what if they had any past lives together. And I would come up with all these interesting things about my sister and knowing her in a previous lifetime and stuff like that. So I would say, yes, I was rather psychic. And I, as a kid, I was classified as a child genius at age 3. And I have a saying that I say, and that is, if you're living on the East Coast, you're a genius if you know the right answer. And if you're on the West Coast, you're a psychic.
You know, there's something to be said for that. Well, look, now, you had this experience at 8. You saw UFOs. You saw this ET that mm-hmm. looked human. At 16, you go into this time warp. And then you receive communication telepathically. Yes. Mm-hmm. Do you think that at least in your case, do you sort of correlate being psychic with you? Is that because of your contact with these ETs, or are you having contact with ETs because you're psychic?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, Kevin, I really think that it was because my mission called for it.
Mm-hmm.
My mission called for me to have these insights into the extraterrestrial realm, and I should say the metaphysical realm as well. I went on to, as a child to, I was the only person in my family to go to church. I asked my parents if they believed in God, and they were kind of like, well, you know, there does seem to be a lot of beauty and order to the universe, so there's a possibility that God could exist. That was kind of my father's answer. And he was 160 IQ, his induction papers into the Army said he had. And he was a very bright guy, and I respected his opinion. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I said, do you believe in ETs, that their extraterrestrials exist? And he said, yes. That it would be absurd to think that we're the only populated planet in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him if he thought we were being contacted, and he said yes. And this was all before I had that experience at 8 years old. I had asked him all those things. So,
I was thinking about what your father said, that it would be absurd for us to be the only populated planet. But we're very often, our view of the cosmos, as highly educated and intellectual and technological as we think we are,
yeah.
Our approach to the cosmos is very much like an isolated tribe on an isolated island in the middle of the South Pacific.
With good reason.
Yeah, it's like we think the island is the world, and there's nobody else out there.
Well, we have been culturally quarantined.
I want to get into that. We have a break coming up in just about 15 seconds. And I want to talk about, you know, Michael talked about that a little bit. I want to get into that. Why are we culturally quarantined? And we'll do that when we come back from the break. All right, folks, we will be back right after this. Don't go away. We'll be right back. And welcome back. My guest this evening is Aurora Light. And Aurora, when we went away for the break, I said, you said that we are culturally quarantined, and I said, I want to get into that. What do you mean by that, and why are we, planet Earth, culturally quarantined, and by whom?
Well, first of all, I have to take you back. I have to take you back to the time of the Luciferian Rebellion and my understanding of it. Now, many of us have heard of this term, Lucifer and the Rebellion, and, you know, as it says in Genesis, the sons of darkness fought the sons of light, meaning some were ignorant and some were more enlightened, is a good way to put it. And I remember back to that time. I actually have memory of being back in the Orion sector over on and in the Orion system. And I remember this rebellion breaking out. And at first, we thought it was something that would pass quickly and that people would tire of it, and we'd move on into more structured order like we had always had. But the rebellion, which we was called back then kind of like the do-your-own-thing crowd,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was do-your-own-thing at anyone's expense. And after a while, they weren't content with doing their own thing. They began going to planets and setting up their modalities over there on planets that really weren't very partial to having their lifestyle around them or wanting to be exposed to their lifestyle. So a dilemma started to break out, and we thought, okay, our civilizations are sacred to us. The way we have things arranged in our lives, the order, the grace, the divine grace that flowed through the societies back then. And it was very beautiful and very orderly for the most part on the Orion sector especially. It was a very evolved sector where Archangel Michael is from. Archangel Michael's from there and many of the other very evolved beings who are elected as our representatives. We have a republic back on Orion who represents our representatives are elected by us. Now the Pleiades. Let's go over to the Pleiades for a moment. The Pleiades is a democracy, and a democracy is really mob rule. That you know, the lowest common denominator usually is what comes into existence. You know, and the difference between a republic, and the United States was meant to be a republic. But we're having a little bit of a problem in that our leaders don't seem to really represent us very well. And we have a hard time getting rid of them.
We have the best leaders that lobbyists can buy.
But getting back to the Lucifer Rebellion and why we're quarantined, so for the Pleiades, for example, let's say the Pleiades was kind of like Switzerland, and it was a neutral territory where the Luciferians could come and go, and which we were told one-third of the spiritual hierarchy went with Luciferian Rebellion, and a lot of families were split apart, a lot of friendships were split apart during this time. And the Pleiades, we warned them. We said, look, if you keep letting these Luciferians come here to your planetary system, you could be brought down quite easily by their influence. And they were saying, you know, we've always let everyone come out to our planet. We're going to continue to do so. So we warned them about the possibility about their lifestyles being destroyed. And sure enough, after a time passed, they approached us and said, we'd like your help in getting the Luciferians off the planet. Things have gotten quite bad. By this time, we had formed a group of planets called the Galactic Federation of Worlds that had allowed us to then intervene on the behalf of different planetary systems, freeing them from this Luciferian influence. So we said, well, we will give you our help and emancipate your planet from the Luciferians, and we will allow you to join the Federation, but as junior members, not with voting rights, until you, you know, have developed further. And so they were taken under our wing. And many, you hear many people here on Earth talk about the Palladians, you know, the Billy Myers contact and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
You hear the word Palladians thrown around a lot. But they are considered to be more advanced than Earthlings, but not by a terrific amount, you know. So, but the Orions are much more advanced, I would say, in galactic protocol and in galactic administration. In fact, you know, the V formation that you see, like in the Phoenix Lights,
mm-hmm.
that is only allowed to be flown by the Federation. They patrol the skies, and no one is allowed to fly in that seven pointed configuration, seven ship configuration in that V,
mm-hmm.
but the Federation. Any other group that tries to fly in that formation, they break them up because they're making it clear that they patrol the skies. They're the ones that keep the order. They're the ones that stop us from being attacked. They are surrounding our planet.
Well, who wants to attack us and why?
Well, it goes back to this Lucifer Rebellion again. After, they want our technology. They want the Federation's technology, and we're not going to give it to them. It's that simple. Nor are we going to allow them to prey upon less developed civilizations. So we protect the less developed civilizations, and we protect the technology. We safeguard it. Now, we can't do everything. In fact, you know, in other words, we can't make people accept a higher way. We can invite them, we can show them a better way and invite them to embrace it, but we can't force them to choose it. So when our leaders choose to work with these renegades of the rebellion, such as the Greys and the Reptilians, and there is also some, you know, lizard beings, you know, we can't force the government of Earth, the people who are in power positions of Earth, to say no to them and yes to us. We can only ask them and invite them. So when we were turned down, when the Federation was turned down in the 1950s during the Eisenhower administration, because they did not want to relinquish their nuclear warheads and release to the public sector the information that they had been held so long holding secret, that then they decided, then they were contacted by the Greys and the military government complex, industrial complex, decided to go with the Greys.
All right, Greys, now, you mentioned
technology, and in exchange for abduction.
You mentioned just a minute ago reptilians and lizard beings, and it sounded as if you were saying they were two different things. Are they?
Well, there's some that are considered to be kind of more snake-like, and others are kind of more alligator-like. Mm-hmm.
All right,
what I have understood, yes.
Based on what I understand you to be saying, you are ET as well. Is that what you're saying?
I am saying I am a volunteer here in Earth Embodiment. There's about 17% of the world's population. If you go to channelforthemasters.com or prepareforthelandings.com, the name of the book, if you go to one of those two places, you will be able to click on and get to the Star People characteristics.
I did that after after we had Michael on the show. I took a look at those. Now, where do those characteristics, where does that list come from? What's the origin of that?
Well, back about 25, 30 years ago, Brad Steiger and Brad and Francie Steiger were doing research with NASA engineers and scientists. And they came up with this list of characteristics that they identified with them. They identified with these characteristics and felt that they, too, were volunteers in Earth embodiment. And we call these this list of star people characteristics. There are such things as compelling eyes, personal charisma, lower than normal body temperature, eye sensitive to the light. Often children and animals are attracted to them. They have a strong electromagnetic field. Things of that nature. They excel in often the sciences or the arts or math or in whatever they do, basically.
Mm-hmm.
They're very good at what they do. They're kind of leaders, charismatic leaders many times.
Okay, and you're saying about 17% of the Earth's population has those characteristics, and
yes.
That's how you can tell that they are not originally from here.
Well, let's put it this way. They are apt to be a volunteer in Earth embodiment because they carry these extraordinary above-average abilities. Now, the average person who is here is caught on the wheel of karma, lifetime after lifetime. And, you know, they will tend to be, you know, more your fundamentalist types because they're desperate to get off the wheel of karma. And they're trying to adhere to simple little rules that will allow them to get off the wheel of karma.
Mm-hmm.
If most of us who are here as star people, we understand the basics. We already know the basic rules. Deep within our being, we're very clear on them.
All right, now,
so we're looking for more advanced metaphysical, scientific information as well to go along with our strong belief system of who we are and why we're here.
All right, now, Michael talked about this too. You're using a term, volunteer in Earth embodiment. Now, how does that work? I mean, if you are originally from the Orion sector and you volunteer to come to Earth and live in a body, an Earth body, doesn't that mean you're dead on Orion?
No, actually, our higher bodies are kind of put like in a storage, and we're not dead at all. You know, mm-hmm. we're in a storage, and we're actually able to inhabit more than one body at a time. Mm-hmm. Some of us who are from the Elohim level. And that is my understanding, that I am an Elohim here in Earth embodiment, as is Michael and some of the others. And when we're, as Elohims here in Earth embodiment, we do have maybe powers and abilities on the higher levels that would be hard for the average person to understand. But as time goes on, mankind's going to evolve where these abilities become more natural and more normal.
All right, now if you're Elohim, Michael's Elohim, does that mean that you guys are angels?
Well, not actually.
Okay, you know what? A break just took over. Just it was synchronicity. I asked the question and the music started. So we'll answer that question when we come back. All right, folks, we'll be back right after this. Right. When we went away, I had just asked a question. I want to rephrase the question. I had said, if you are Elohim, does that mean you're angels? Let me rephrase the question. Are Elohim and angels the same thing?
Well, not really, no. Not usually, except for, you know, some very highly evolved angels, like Archangel Michael and stuff, who are, they're more political, I would say. He's a little more political than most of the angelic race. Usually the angels carry out the decrees and the orders of the Elohim. The Elohim are, I would say, more administrative.
Okay.
And usually, you know, it's government-oriented.
So then the angels would be in the same function, or a similar function, to what a marshal is who carries out the orders of a court.
Yes. The angels, they carry out divine will, and the Elohim try to bring divine will through into all matters. And they also try and guide the arts and sciences and, you know, the educational process of the beings on the planetary systems. So it'll be the most beneficial possible. I mean, they're very interested in seeing mankind, or I should say humanity, evolve in a way that is beneficial to all and is going to bring out the best in each and every individual.
All right, now you've mentioned a couple of times divine will. What is that? What are we talking about here when we say divine will?
Well, it's my understanding that there is a central government, so to speak, and the great central sun, the Alpha and the Omega Logos, who do govern on the highest levels, and we're talking about very high dimensional levels, 12th dimension, and as Richard Hoagland talked about before the United Nations, over 28 dimensions have already been discovered by science. These are just different stations on the radio, so to speak. And these dimensions are just fully like the third dimension we're living in right here. And as we graduate, when these landings take place, and as we graduate into a higher level spiritually, we are also going to transform into a higher dimensional frequency.
You know, you've been at this for over 2 decades. So what I'm about to say is not new to you. But, you know, there is, in the world of UFOs and UFO, I'll say enthusiasts, people interested in studying and researching UFOs, there is a sizable contingent that sees nothing at all beyond technology involved with UFOs. All right, and then there is a sizable contingent that sees, well, they're sizable but smaller, that sees anything having to do with UFOs as being a, and they usually refer to it as a deception of the devil. And
well,
it's all evil.
Yeah.
And then there's another group, and it's your group, that sees that it's both. There are good ones, there are bad ones, but you see a more metaphysical side to the UFOs.
I want to make that clear. I wouldn't just get on board any ship. You know, that'd be just like going out and hitchhiking, No, I wouldn't do that. I'm very particular about who I associate with. I want to associate with people who are, you know, benevolent, and evolved enough to care about the individual, and also are trying to uphold the divine will. You know, like, for example, the Greys, you know, let's take them for an example. You know, look how, you know how they all look alike? They walk alike, they talk alike, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They're like clone types.
Mm-hmm.
The individuality is gone out of their race. For efficiency replaced individuality.
Okay, but that's not the case then with the beings from the Orion sector? They don't all look alike, talk alike?
even though that's where the Luciferian Rebellion broke out in Orion Sector, mm-hmm. that's where the Unholy Six is, the six planets we could never reclaim. And those are what you would call the, you know, the hellish planet, where that they still control. But yet, all this is about to be cleansed, because the whole universe is about to go through a dimensional shift. So this is going to be a cleansing that takes place on every single level.
All right, let's go back to, we've got about... 4.5 minutes here till our top of the hour break.
Are we going to be able to talk about a conference that?
Yeah, we'll do that.
And that we're going to be at in Sedona.
Yep, we'll do that. We'll do that after the break. I want to go back to quarantine. Why is Earth quarantined?
Earth is quarantined, as I was trying to explain about this Lucifer rebellion and about the deals that our government did with the Greys. The Federation's not going to give their technology information to a planet that is run like ours, that uses this information to exploit and control in a way that's really not humane many times.
So this quarantine actually began then in the 1950s. Is that what you're saying?
Well, our technology was captured, yes, you might say, but from the Greys. The Greys could freely allow, they gave them the transistor, I'm told. That was the first thing by an undercover agent, told me that was the first gift that was given to our government. That was why they went with the Greys, is that they learned about the transistor radio and FM radio. Those kinds of things were given at first. And then more was given as time went on. At the Area 51 and other places, many of them interact together. But the heavens are being cleansed now. You know, this it's not going to be allowed to continue that innocent people are exploited. So many of these people here on Earth are being exploited by the military gray.
Yeah, but you know, that's been going on as long as there's been human history. The kings and generals and armies have exploited common people since day one of human history.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's unfortunate.
So I guess my question is, were we not quarantined all those past centuries? And just became quarantined.
I think I know where you're. What I need to clear up here for you.
Okay.
So that this planet was originally a karmic training school for the more slowly evolving individuals. This was like a first grade classroom.
Okay.
And when the rebellion broke out, the Luciferians said, "Hey, now there's a nice group ready for picking."
Ah, okay. So we got picked by them because we were slow.
We got picked, this planet got picked by them because the beings who were here were quite childlike. They hadn't evolved to have the wisdom that some of the more evolved planets had. So, you know, they were easily mesmerized by the antics of the Luciferians.
Well, we're easily mesmerized even now.
They're able to be controlled, you know, like with, you know, smoke and mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
And they always used underhanded techniques to control them. Hypnosis was very popular. It still is today.
But you say that this is coming to an end very, very soon.
I would say yes. I'd say we're headed to the pinnacle peak of it all. We're climbing Jacob's ladder. We're getting up there. We're going to reach the top. We're going to be able to see the view, and we're going to be able to realize where we've been, what's been going on. It's all going to become very clear to us very soon. Science, religion, philosophy, they're going to all merge together, and people are going to get the grand picture.
We have this break coming up, and we're less than a minute away from it. But, you know, let me make this comment. One of the reasons I think that we have such a segmented view of everything and almost a segregated view of everything is because that's the way our education system is, thanks to John Dewey. We don't study science as it relates to music. We don't study math as it relates to the universe. We study math. We study history. We study music. All separate, segregated, thanks to John Dewey. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a few minutes, and we'll continue. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Aurora Light. We'll bring her right back online in just a moment. Quick announcement. You need to know that all the music on the Kevin Smith Show is from independent artists. And boy, I tell you, they do some great music, huh? You can get that music. You can download most of that music from two different sites that we use. GarageBand.com is one of them. The other one is music.podshow.com. So go over there, fill up your iPod, have a great, great listen, all right? Aurora Light is my guest, and Aurora, let's talk just a little bit about a conference that's coming up. Ed Grimsley's been with us, Michael's been with us, and so we've talked about it. People know about it, but let's remind everyone and those who are listening for the very first time need to know about it.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Yes, we're excited to have you there as well. You'll be presenting at this conference. It is the UFO Skywatch Conference, and you can find it at ufoskywatch.com. And that's going to be the weekend of Memorial Weekend. That's going to be May 22nd through the 24th. It's going to be fantastic weather there in Sedona. And it's going to be at this gorgeous place called the Creative Life Center. This place is just stunning. Wait till you come there. And the energy there is so high. It vibrates. This gentleman who uses these electromagnetic field reading instruments to measure the vibrational frequency of places around the world, mm-hmm. was saying that Sedona vibrates like at a 220, which is quite high, but that where this place is situated in Sedona, the Creative Life Center vibrates at a 550 frequency. It's so high. And the people who are coming to speak are extraordinary. We've put together a real great group. You're going to be there, of course, and you might want to tell your listeners what you're going to be talking about.
Yeah, well, I'm still working on a title for this, but I'm going to be talking about the shift that's taking place in the media, in the way they treat UFO information, and what is forcing that shift.
Well, that's an interesting topic, yes. That'll be exciting. And Michael will be talking about the human-appearing extraterrestrials and the cover-up on them. William Alec, who is going to be a guest of yours tomorrow night, he is an interesting guy who is going to be talking about the suppression of anti-gravity and free energy. He'll be doing a PowerPoint presentation on that is going to be astounding. And we're going to be talking, Michael's also going to be talking about the different races of extraterrestrials. He's in his PowerPoint presentation. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to have Alfred Weber there talking about exopolitics. And
David Sarita is going to be there?
Pardon me?
Isn't David Sarita going to be there as well?
David Sarita is going to be there, yes. Mm-hmm. And he's had experiences, too, with Ashtar, like Michael has. Ashtar Command is the command that oversees what's going on here for the volunteers in Earth Embodiment, making sure they're protected while they're on their missions.
Well, I know it's going to be a great weekend, and people, I've been getting emails from people.
We're leaving off names. Ed Grimsley, of course.
Of course.
Was there with the Night Sky Watch glasses, and then Jose Escamilla will be there with his latest films on ETs and the moon and Mars. So I invite everybody to go to UFOSkyWatch.com, check out the people there. We've got the price really low for this weekend, and it includes meals and everything, and it's just a great deal.
Well, I've been getting emails from listeners who say they are coming, some from Texas, some from Ohio, South Carolina.
They must get their tickets in advance here, because the hotel rooms, it's Memorial Weekend. We want to make sure you guys have rooms, and so you need to book your rooms here. Just reserve your rooms. You don't have to prepay for them so far in advance, but if you call up and reserve your rooms, that would be a bright thing to do.
Okay.
And all the hotel information there on the website, and they should get their seminar tickets in advance, because we're expecting to sell out. We're not going to be able to handle more than 350 people, and we're expecting to have a full sellout.
Well, I hope we do, and I'm certainly looking forward to that. Now, I want to open up the telephone line so folks can call in if they have a question or a comment for you. And we'll do that right now. The telephone number, ladies and gentlemen, is 602-539-9580. 602-539-9580. Of course, if calling that number is going to cost you money for long distance, use our toll-free number, 888-223-4599. 888-223-4599. Now, I have had a number of people who have asked me the past 2 or 3 years, they've called in and they've asked questions about indigo children, star children, etc. And what are you? Are you a star child? Are you an indigo child? And what's the difference?
Well, that's a good question. You know, the star people information came out, it's going on 25, 30 years ago. And, you know, it pretty much summarized up the fact that there are these volunteers that come in Earth embodiment. And then they talk about the indigo and the crystal children and stuff. Yes, I would say that there is probably an influx of extraterrestrial energy that's coming in at this time, even from the grays, okay? I see, and the reptilians. It's not just the Federation, unfortunately, who is influencing our society's evolvement.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen people, lots of people actually, and not just one or two, walking around who clearly have gray genes in their genealogy. You know, you can recognize them. They're usually very spindly looking. They eat very little usually, and often have large heads and, you know, the large eyes and sparse hair sometimes. And
now, you say they eat very little?
Yeah, they don't eat very much at all, usually. The gray hybrids who come in.
Why do they not eat? Why do they not eat?
Well, they're not used to eating, the grays. I think they just have their little cocktail that they drink aboard the ships. They're not into the beautiful feasts of the Federation. Federation has beautiful food and beautiful seas aboard their ships. I've been aboard their ships.
All right, let's go to the telephone line. We've got a couple of calls lined up, waiting. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming, and I'm sorry about the static.
Okay, Brent.
You have a question for me, Brent?
What?
You have a question for me, Brent?
Yes, I do. I would like to know. See, I've always been of the opinion that the individual is the ultimate sovereign. So why did the Orions go to the governments?
Well, there's planetary protocol. They don't just bust their way in, so to speak. They were trying to give our leaders a chance to embrace these changes in a graceful fashion. Does that make sense to you? They don't
want
things.
It does.
They don't want to just come in and make the, turn everything upside down, so to speak.
Yeah, but have they finally realized that our quote unquote leaders are a bunch of screw ups?
Yes, after trying for the last 60 years and 70 years, they've come to the conclusion that there's going to have to be a show of force.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Brent, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right. Let's
prepare for the landings, the new book that's out, and a lot of your questions will be answered on that one.
All right. Let's go to the next phone call, and let's get this. I'm having trouble pushing buttons here. I'm button challenged here.
Right.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Aurora, Kevin, amazing show tonight. I've loved every minute of it.
Well, thank you.
Aurora, what about the Anunnaki? Where do they fit in the picture here?
You know, I'm not the biggest historian as far as Earthlings go and all the chaos and suffering that they've been through. But I do know that the Luciferians, when they come into any culture, when they start with the human sacrifices and then this hierarchy that's usually very demanding and it subjugates a lot of people and stuff. So you can always tell who's the good guys and who's the bad by when you look around at your neighbors and how well they're doing.
Do you think that the other human-looking aliens, the Pleiadians, I guess you can call them, or the Pleiadians and whatnot, do you think they're trying to perhaps convince the Anunnaki that they don't own us like they think they do?
Well, it's very clear that this planet's going to be liberated by the Federation. And any other attempts by any other forces will fail. This is the cleansing of the heavens you've heard about.
Okay.
It's a cleansing of Earth, and it's a cleansing of the heavens.
Kevin, thank you for the call. Let's go to our next call. Caller, you're alive on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. It's Debbie from Columbus.
Hi, Debbie.
Hi there, Debbie. Thanks for calling in.
Hello, Aurora. I'm planning on going to the conference. I've actually just paid for it today. I had a question. I'm a
awesome.
I'm a twice contactee myself. My first contact experience was when I was 4 years old, and my second was in my teens. I also remember on being on one of the ships in one of the classrooms where I was observing some kind of a quantum equation or something. Anyway, what I wanted to ask was, after your experiences, your contact experiences, did your psychic abilities like just start blossoming, or did it happen before your contact experiences?
The first time I remember playing a trick on my parents, I was in my high chair, and I was about, I remember being about 18 months old and sitting in my high chair and deciding, and I could speak pretty well, and I was going on 2 years old. I was around that age. And I said to my parents, a very embarrassing thing, and just put them on the spot. I asked them a question I knew they couldn't answer me without really, going into some kind of detail that they didn't want to go to. I asked them, why when grandfather leaves the bathroom is the toilet seat left up? And the whole dining room table just cracked up laughing. And I knew the answer already before I asked it. And I knew I was playing a game on their head, and I knew it. and I was just laughing at him, laughing at me. And then when I was 5 years old, I was, I went to my first day of school, and I came home and I said to my mother, "Oh my God," I said, "I am like a foot taller than these other kids and nobody gets my jokes. I feel like a freak. I don't know how I'm going to make it through this." And I said, "How many years did you say I have to go to the school?" She goes, 13 years. I go, "Oh my God, I'm just not going to make it, you know?" And I said, "I'm from another planet that's more advanced." And she just looked at me and laughed. And I said, "Yeah, I'm from a more advanced planet, and on my planet we learn really quickly. We put on our thinking cap, and we learn." And I said, "I don't have time for 13 years to go this slowly." And I said, I'll go nuts. I said, "I got off at the wrong planet. When they said planet Earth, I got off at the wrong planet."
Debbie, thanks so much. I hope to see you at the conference.
Oh, yeah, we'll look forward to seeing you there, Debbie. But my psychic powers, I think, are something that I was born with, and we're all born with, and they're kind of like beat out of us, if you know what I mean. First, we're given the injections of these wonderful vaccines with mercury in them and stuff that make you go half mad. And then if that doesn't do it, they'll fluoride your water and they'll put some mercury in your mouth, and that should do it.
Oh, mercy. All right, Debbie, thanks. I hope to see you at the conference.
After all that, and placid and easy, docile and very easy to lead.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that is the aim. All right, the telephone number is 602-539-9580, 602-539-9580, or toll-free 888-223-4599. By the way, that toll-free number is toll-free in Canada as well. All right, so if you're in Canada and you wish to call, that's a toll-free number. If you happen to not even be in the United States or Canada, you're in Australia, you're in Germany or Finland or Estonia or Taipei or any place that's not the United States or Canada, if you don't want to spend money for that international telephone call, what you can do is go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and you'll see a link that says Flash message. It's right in the middle of the page. It's in green letters. You really can't miss it. It's sort of fluorescent green. It says Flash message. If you click that, it'll open a page where you can send me a flash message. We call it Flash because when you click send, it comes in, it starts flashing on my monitor over here on my right, and I know that it has arrived. I'll read your question or your comment. And I'll be more than happy to ask our guests to answer the question or to address the comment. All right, now we have a flash message that has come in from Australia, from Paul. And it says, "Hello, Kevin. Please ask Aurora who is piloting the orange orb. The orange orb-like spacecraft, please. I had an amazing experience, about 30 of them, over two nights in the sky, 500 feet above my house from 3 a.m. or at 3 a.m. 9 years ago. So what about this orange orb type spacecraft? We see them here in the Phoenix area, too."
Well, it's interesting. Bill just told me, William Alec told me that he just took some photos that there was orbs in the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen these orbs. I've seen them in my backyard. And I'm thinking that they are Federation monitoring things, and higher evolved ETs, many who are angelic realm monitoring things sometimes. So I know that the Federation is in what we call guardian action around this planet. I've seen them with my own two eyes, and so has the other person I was with, where there are actually thousands of ships surrounding this planet. So nothing's coming in here that they haven't monitored and that they don't know about. And I would have to think that that we have a lot of different dimensional beings here from different venues with different protocols. The orange shifts, that would be a good question for Michael Alajon. He would probably be able to tune in to him, into who that is.
Okay.
I would imagine that it was probably a federation ship. And these orbs, I know that they monitor things quite often. And they are showing up more and more in people's pictures. In fact, I want to invite all your listeners out there to send us your metaphysical UFO ET type photos and videos. And because up on UFO Skywatch, we're going to post them up there, what people are taking, and we're going to also have an awards program for people who send in interesting things. So we look forward to getting that information in your stories, too. We're going to be having a weekly newsletter on this information coming out, too. So just a way for us all to be able to stay in contact with each other.
All right, let's go back to the phone line, okay? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Okay, Bob, you're going to have to speak up for us because I can barely hear you.
All righty.
That's good.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, how's it going?
Oh, it's going pretty good. Are you going to come to Sedona?
I probably won't be able to make it out there because of work and different things. But it sounds like a pretty fun event.
Yeah, I hope you can get out there, sneak away for a day or two.
Well, I've been doing a little bit of studying on different kinds of environmental conditions that would be able to sustain life. And I've been looking at Mars a lot lately. And from what I can tell, it used to be really Earth-like. If it had water and a magnetosphere, it sounds to me like it had a lot going on there. I think that the Earth got hit by some kind of an asteroid, which created the moon, which might have set us back. And plus, that cooled down because it's a smaller planet faster. So it was really like a billion years.
Oh, stop the movie for a second. Stop the movie for 1 second here, Bob. I have to stop you on the moon thing and stuff. Okay, the moon is actually a planetoid that was built by the ETs.
That's incredible.
Yeah, the ETs built that. And that's just to give us some light at night. And in fact, it's been said that it's hollow and it rings. That when things have hit it, they can actually hear a ringing noise, like it's made out of some kind of metal.
And by the way, it was NASA that said that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and as far as Mars go, it's my understanding between Jupiter and Mars, there was a planet called Maldek that blew itself up in a nuclear war, and that's what caused our planet to shift on its axis and messed up some of the other planetary systems, planets in our system, too. And that they'll never allow another planet to blow itself up again because it was so devastating to the other worlds.
Wow, that's pretty interesting information.
And that debris from Maldek is what we call Moldavite.
Interesting. The asteroid belt.
Yeah. Yeah, that asteroid belt between Jupiter and Mars was Maldek. And that's where they had quite a horrible nuclear war.
Wow.
And they're not going to allow this planet
to... Well, there's been a lot of interesting, awesome things on this show tonight. I mean, it's been hard to step away from the computer because you just stay glued with all the incredible facts and possibilities. I guess I'll just leave with one question and then I'll hang up.
All right. Make it quick because we have a break starting.
Do you know anything about past intelligent civilizations on Mars? And thank you.
Okay, and we'll answer that question right after we come back from this break. We'll be back, folks.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Aurora Light. And Aurora, when we went away for break, Bob had just asked a question. Bob from California. Yes. Do you want to address that question?
What was it again?
Do you know anything about life on Mars?
Ah, well, Mars, you know, was, as my understanding, a Federation evolved type place where there was, you know, an advanced civilization there. But I think when Molduk blew itself up, that Mars was greatly affected and that the surface world was quite destroyed from that. And so what you're seeing is the remnants of what is left of that civilization and today, which is not too much to my understanding. But Alfred Weber was going to be at the conference in Sedona. He'll be talking about life on Mars, and he says there's all different kinds of life forms there. He says it's quite fascinating. He's going to be revealing a lot of information there, and he has spoke at the United Nations many times about this type of thing, and has a lot of credibility, and I'll be very interested to see. I've known Alfred Weber for about 30 years. I first met him in New York City when I was doing a national public radio station there in New York City, the NPR station. And Alfred Weber says that life on Mars does exist, and it's quite unusual.
All right, let's go to the telephone.
There's like 30-foot snakes and all kinds of stuff.
I don't want to go there if they even have a one-foot snake. I don't like snakes. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Don calling from Phoenix.
Hi, Don.
How you doing tonight?
Good.
Good. Hello, Don. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Aurora. You mentioned that you have a book, something about landing.
It's called Prepare for the Landings.
That's it.
And you can go prepareforthelandings.com.
Now, you have a date when these landings are supposed to take place? And also, is there going to be disclosure before then? And one more question, I'll take all these off the air. Do you think Obama's been set up and put in place to be a part of this disclosure?
Well, that's interesting. Ruth Montgomery, who did the book, wrote the book Strangers Amongst Us, said that in 2008 we were going to have a walk-in president.
Okay, now I know what you mean by that, but explain that for people who are new to this information.
Well, there is such a thing as soul transfers. There are some souls that it just gets to be so overwhelming for them that they ask upstairs for relief. And a more evolved soul comes into their body and takes over their situation and is able to usually rise above it pretty quickly and move on. And Obama is said to be a walk-in president.
All right, now who is saying that he is a walk-in?
Well, not only did Ruth Montgomery say it, who was a very famous write-on channel and psychic, but Michael Elejon, who has done thousands of readings for people all over the world, tuning them into their life mission and purpose, you can give Michael a person's name who he has never met, and he will tell you all about them. And I've tested him on 200 or 300 people, and it's just amazing the information he brings through. You go, how did you know that about this person? It's just amazing. And he just channels it all through. So they know us upstairs. They know who each and every one of us is and what we're all about.
Does President Obama, is he aware that he is a walk-in?
You know, I don't think he's come into his full consciousness yet. I think he's being guided in a more unconscious way as yet. But I think as time goes on in his presidency, I think he's going to have a more direct contact I think they're going to, you know, wake them up, shake them up.
When he was asked during the campaign a question in one of the debates about the UFO issue, his response was, I am more concerned about problems we are looking at here on Earth than I am about whether there are UFOs or not. And some people interpreted that as that he was just not interested.
Well, you know, when you come from a place like Chicago,
mm-hmm.
where there is mass suffering all around you, and you see people, you know, scrounging around trying to, you know, have enough to eat and have a roof over their heads and have some transportation and just the very basics. When, you know, when you see people like that all around you, thousands and thousands of people who need to have, be uplifted and need to have this economic disaster straightened out, and they need to have our educational system straightened out, and we need to give people a lot more directions and opportunities and stuff to apply themselves. When you see all these problems all around you, like he has, it's easy to be flippant and give an answer like that, because he probably feels his constituents want him to address these, you know, quite disastrous circumstances.
Let me jump in here and just tell you something you're not aware of, although our audience certainly would be aware of it, those who are watching on our internet TV. The we started talking about this thing of there are some people who say that he is a walk-in president. We started talking about that, and these folks that give us outside help that we don't ask for cut our video feed. Our workaround reestablished the video feed, and so people are back online and watching again. But for a few seconds, it cut it. That's not unusual.
What did you say?
It's not unusual for them to do that.
Did that happen?
Yeah, it happened. I just sat here and watched it.
Oh, just now, you mean?
Right now. Right now, they cut the video feed, and it's our little workaround reestablished the video. But and so people are back on and watching and listening. So it's quite obvious
where
that these
were when I was caught. Do I need to reiterate anything here for
no, no, yeah. no. But it's interesting that these lovers of freedom and defenders of the Constitution absolutely hate freedom of speech. All right, let's talk about, he said, on the landings, what about a date and you know, what kind of disclosure is going to take place?
Well, you know, as it says in the Bible, no man knows the day or time. That's for a reason. Because we want, the Federation wants as little interference as possible when they have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to, you know, announce a date and time and just set it all up so there's a nice lineup in front of the theater.
Okay.
So they have to instead say, okay, when is the best time for us to intervene here, you know? And that is what's considered. And they, when they get the signal from the high command, you know, upstairs from the central, great central sun where a lot of this divine energy is interpreted and sent out into the cosmic realms. You know, see these logos beings who live in the great central sun in the center of the Milky Way. And we also have logos here for our sun here on our solar system. Every planet has a logos that is like in charge of it. It's like an entity, you know, that is the planet itself. And these cosmic higher realms are something that us Earthlings can only glimpse at and understand so much of as while we're here in Earth embodiment. But as time goes on, much more is going to be revealed to us. And, you know, I've noticed, too, that the CIA seems to have, a great penchant for going to used bookstores and buying up all these beautiful, wonderful books that were printed on all these subjects that we have been discussing about the history of, the planet and stuff. In fact, they broke into my place in Prescott Valley and stole only these UFO books that were very precious to me about all this kind of information. And I was really blown away that they stole about 20 books off my bookshelf. And that was all they touched. You know, up there in Prescott Valley where William Alec and I were residing, and it was very annoying, you know. Very annoying.
Now, how do you know that it was the CIA that did that?
Because nobody else would come in and steal them.
Well, I don't know. There's several agencies besides them.
Some UFO books.
Yeah, there's several agencies besides the CIA might be interested.
Whether they were CIA or FBI or UO, you know, whatever alphabet agency they were, really doesn't matter. The fact is that they were operating discreetly,
uh-huh.
You know, in a way that was not above board, and felt that they had the freedom to come into my home and abscond with these books.
When did that happen?
That was about 4 or 5 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was very annoying, because then you don't want to really go to sleep at night, you know, because you're wondering, well, how did they get in? And how did they, you know, because there's no evidence of them entering. But then, of course, I found out, after I asked that question, I found out about the many tactics they use for entry.
Oh, yeah, it can be done. It's actually not all that difficult.
No, it's not very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, since then we've set up a camera system and stuff on our places, but, you know, I advise people who are working in sensitive areas probably just have a good camera system going. They can disable them, but, you know, you can tell when they've been disabled, too.
All right, the final question that Don asked was about disclosure. Is disclosure going to happen prior to these landings?
Disclosure is happening right now in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And is our government going to admit that they've been lying to us all these years? Well, when's the last time they did that?
Well, you know, honestly, I can think of a time. It happened under the Bill Clinton administration, and the Clinton administration let the information go public that the government had, back in the 50s, and I think up into the 60s, been conducting radiation experiments on citizens without permission and without the citizens' knowledge. And in at least one case, they were irradiating the milk that was being fed to children in an orphanage. And there was a great public outcry and outrage, and I think there have been some reparations that have been paid as a result of that. But it has been done, and it could be done again. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on final approach. We might have time for one more telephone call, and we will open up the telephone line and allow you to call in just a moment. But let me remind you about the conference now. The conference is going to be on Memorial weekend, and so it'll be the 22nd, 23rd, and 24th of May. And you need to go over to UFOSkywatch.com and make your reservations for that conference. All right, let's bring Aurora Light back online. And Aurora, we're kind of racing towards the end of the show now.
I just wanted to clarify something here, and that is Obama, it looks like, is planning on doing disclosure by the people he has chosen to have around him. And we are expecting more disclosure to come through. He has, I have been told from my sources, and had it confirmed by my sources upstairs, that he has asked for all these aircraft companies who've been working on these black op projects to give him full disclosure.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. You know, it's
he wants to know exactly what's going on.
Well, yeah. Of course, the problem has been for several presidents. They wanted to know what was exactly what was going on, and were told they didn't have a high enough clearance. They had no need to know.
That's right.
Yeah. So we'll see. I hope it happens.
He's not going to accept that.
I hope it happens. All right. You know, during this show, I've decided on a whole different topic that I'm going to speak on at the conference, and I'll tell you after the show.
All right.
Yeah. I've decided to do it. I've been holding this one back, but I'll do it.
Can't we have a hint?
Has something to do with marsupials.
Mm.
Yeah, see, that threw you a curve, didn't it?
Yes, it did. It certainly did.
Oh, mercy.
Now, I think that people like Michael and I who have had this contact throughout our lives with human-appearing extraterrestrials who form the spiritual hierarchy and who do patrol our skies, who are making sure that we are not going to be attacked by renegade forces, who are making sure that our leaders do not blow us up, and who do want to help us in our personal lives. You know, those people who want to know more about that information, you know, I hope they can pick up the book, Prepare for the Landings, and learn more and possibly make a connection with Michael, get a reading from him, and get tuned into their personal mission and purpose, the real reason they incarnated here. And we wear quartz crystals, by the way, Michael and I, and a lot of our friends and the people we connect with get these crystals from us because they increase your auric field dramatically, and it makes it less impervious to negative, you know, influences, imbalanced energies that are being broadcast from HARP and disincarnated entities and, you know, along with these imbalanced energy forces out there. You know, it's good to have your auric field really strong, and these quartz crystals are designed to balance the chakras of the body and increase your energy. And along with that, we also suggest that light workers watch their diet carefully and also take this substance we've been on since 1987. It's the world's number one selling liquid elixir that's made up of 14 different botanicals that are synergistically combined to oxygenate and detoxify your body. And it's called KM by Mattal Botanical, and it's on healthgalleria.com. And if people go there and they start chugging this stuff, after 90 days, it'll clean out their blood. You take 1 ounce a day for 3 bottles, will clean out your blood in 90 days. And then it takes 5 more months to clean out every organ of your body. But studies have shown that your oxygen levels increase by 30% and toxins are removed from the bloodstream, very rapid and easy process. So,
and what is it called?
I've done that since 1987, and it helps us throw out the toxins from the damn chemtrails that they're spraying all the time.
Tell us again what it's called.
It's called KM by Mattal Botanical, and it's on our website, healthgalleria.com.
Mm-hmm.
Healthgalleria, two L's in galleria.com. And, you know, anyone who wants to be a distributor of it, I'd love to have them contact me. And, you know, I'd be happy to talk to them about that. And, you know, you can help thousands of people avoid cancer, you know, and a lot of things. When you oxygenate your blood and you detoxify it, that is the secret to staying youthful and very healthy. You know, that is one of the big things to do. So we recommend everybody out there, get these toxins from these damn chemtrails out of your body, because if you don't keep flushing your body consistently, they're going to build up and cause you immune system problems.
Okay. Aurora, I want to thank you for being with us. Again, the name of the book, folks, is...
Yeah, and I do personal consultations for people on health matters.
Okay. The name of the book is Prepare for the Landings, and... you can get that at prepareforthelandings.com, I believe. Is that that's the correct address
yes,
to go
it
to?
Is.
Okay, prepareforthelandings.com. And you can go over there and grab that book. All right, now, tell you what, Aurora, just stay on the line with me for a moment. We've got a couple of things I got to do here as we come up towards the end of the show here. And we're racing towards the brick wall at the end of the show. let me remind all of you, if you've been saying, look, I want to attend that seminar that Kevin's going to do, and I'm going to register, and you just haven't done it yet, the registration closes Friday at noon, my time. That's Pacific Coast time, West Coast time, Left Coast time. At 12 noon, it's over. You can't register after that, because we have to then send emails to everyone who has registered and give them the password to be able to access the video on Sunday afternoon. The seminar will take place this Sunday starting at 3 p.m. West Coast time. So you make the time conversion, all right? So at 3 p.m. Pacific time is when it starts. So if you're in Central Time Zone, you make the conversion, all right? You can figure that out, right? It's 5 p.m. your time. And East Coast time, 6 p.m. You've got till Friday at noon, and then we have to close it down. Now, you might be saying, well, you know, I'll wait till he does it next time. Not going to be a next time. This is it. This is the last time that I'll be doing this seminar. And so if you want to get in, now's the time. Also, don't forget, if you want to go to the conference that's going to be in Sedona that we've talked about here tonight, if you want to go to that conference, you need to go over to UFOSkyWatch.com and make your reservations for that conference. That's going to be in May. And my seminar is this weekend. The Ed Grimsley Skywatch Conference is going to be in May in Sedona. So you get all that sorted out. And one of the things that will help you keep things sorted out is subscribe to our free newsletter. You got to ask yourself, why do you really want to be in the dark? It's free. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you wish to call me, but just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.